Conrad caught up to Kingman as they reached the end of the canyon. Even in the bad light, Conrad saw the slopes falling away and the land in front of him opening into that basin. Compared to other basins, like the Humboldt in Nevada, it was tiny, just a speck in a vast, rugged landscape. But it was a whole world to the people who lived there. He was an interloper, Conrad thought, who had no real right to be interfering with their lives, other than the certain knowledge that Agonistes Hyssop and Jackson Leatherwood were evil men who had evil plans. Somebody had to put a stop to those plans, and it looked like that was going to be up to Conrad and the men who had come with him. A number of paths branched out from the trail that ran through the lower part of the canyon. Kingman took one leading toward the center of the basin. As Conrad trotted along beside him, he saw what appeared to be cultivated fields, as well as orchards and pastures where herds of woolly sheep grazed and moved around sleepily.
Are the fields irrigated from that spring you mentioned?
Yeah. Hyssop put in a series of aqueducts and irrigation ditches all over the basin. He has a steam-powered pump that pumps water to the ditches, as well as some windmills. He's a smart man, I'll give him that. Makes him even more dangerous when you're going up against him.
Conrad understood. An intelligent enemy was always worse. Kingman stopped short, touched Conrad's arm, and pointed.
There. That's Father Agony's fort.
It was deserving of the name, Conrad saw as he peered through a gap in the trees. The big house stood several hundred yards away on a slight knoll that gave it a view of the large, calm pool formed by the spring and surrounded by rocks. Junipers grew all around the house, which, as Kingman and Ollie had said, had a bizarre look to it because of the way it had been enlarged over the years. Wings ran off at all angles, at different lengths and heights, sprouting from the main original part of the structure like the legs of a spider from its body. In fact, Conrad thought if you looked at the house from above, it might even resemble a fat, deformed spider that had stopped scuttling along through the Utah landscape and squatted there, motionless, waiting to trap any unwary insects that ventured near it. Not a very comforting thought, he told himself with a shadow of a smile.
Does he keep guards in that watchtower all the time?
Not unless things have changed since I was banished. He puts guards up there only when he's expecting trouble.
Like now, since he stole Selena back from you?
Oh, yeah. There might be guards up there. Stay behind cover as much as you can, especially when we're sneaking up on the Webster house. It's close enough that anybody on the tower could see us without much trouble.
What about the Webster house?
It's just a regular adobe ranch house about a quarter mile east of Hyssop's fort. We can circle around behind it and keep the house between us and Hyssop's while we approach.
Sounds good. Let's go.
No lights appeared to be burning in the house as they moved silently toward it. Suddenly, dogs began to bark somewhere else in the basin, and Conrad wondered if the other men had run into trouble. More dogs started carrying on, as dogs always will, and within a minute or two, it sounded like every dog in the basin was barking.
This is good. If old Soames Webster hears his hounds barking, he'll think they're pitching a fit because every other dog around here is.
It might be a lucky break for the two of them, all right, Conrad thought. He still worried about Ollie and the others, but concentrated on his own mission.
Selena never said anything about having any brothers. Will there be any men in the house besides her father?
She doesn't have any brothers. Webster had only the one wife, Selena's mother. Never wanted any others, or so he claimed. And after Selena was born, well, I guess her mother couldn't have any more children or something. She was the only one. That made her pretty unusual.
I imagine.
Being unusual made Hyssop want her even more, I think. He's always regarded her as special, even when she was a child.
They came to a stop behind the house. As Kingman had said, it was a typical low-ceilinged, flat-roofed adobe ranch house. Thick beams known as vigas protruded along the upper edges of the walls. A shaded, arbor-like portal was set in the center of the building.
The kitchen is inside that door. Selena's room is to the right. Her father's room is the other way, at the left front of the house.
Unless Webster's changed things around in case somebody tries to sneak in and get her.
You're giving the man credit for too much intelligence. Webster never had a thought in his head that Father Agony didn't have first.
Kingman started forward.
Come on.
Conrad cat-footed along behind Kingman. The young man had just reached the door and was about to pull the string that would open the latch when light suddenly blazed up all around them. Men with torches had lit them and stepped around both corners of the house, and the reddish glare washed over Conrad and Kingman, blinding them for a moment.
See, brethren, how the Lord has delivered the evildoers right into our hands.
Conrad knew without being told that the voice belonged to Elder Agonistes Hyssop, Father Agony. Despite the glaring torchlight, from the corner of his eye, Conrad saw Kingman reach for a gun. His hand shot out and closed around Kingman's wrist, stopping the draw before it could really begin. Half-blind, surrounded by riflemen, slapping leather would only get them shot to pieces. That wouldn't help save Selena or anybody else.
Easy. They'll kill you.
You're blessed right, we will.
Conrad recognized the familiar voice. It belonged to Jackson Leatherwood. The leader of the Avenging Angels was somewhere behind the light.
Sooner or later, we'll kill you no matter what you do, you heathens. So you might as well go ahead and reach for your irons now and get it over with.
Now, Jackson, there's no need to gloat simply because we have emerged triumphant from our travails with these young men. You gentlemen, drop your weapons, please. Carefully. Use your left hand.
Kingman glanced at Conrad. A muscle jumped in his tightly clenched jaw.
Better do what he says. This isn't over.
Listen to your Gentile friend, Daniel. But be advised, he's wrong about one thing. This is most definitely over.
Conrad reached with his left hand and slid the Colt out of its holster. He leaned over and placed the revolver on the ground. Beside him, Kingman followed suit. He dropped his knife on the ground next to the gun. Once the two of them were disarmed, several men hurried forward. They wore the wide-brimmed hats and long coats of Avenging Angels, but Conrad didn't recognize any of them. He figured the men would grab them and hustle them off to wherever Hyssop intended to lock them up. But without warning, one of the men rammed a rifle barrel in his belly. Conrad doubled over in pain. Another man kicked his feet out from under him. The same thing happened to Kingman. As the Avenging Angels closed in around them, Conrad thought they intended to stomp the life out of him and Kingman. Instead, the men stopped, then the circle parted. Conrad lifted his head. Jackson Leatherwood came through the gap first and looked down at the prisoners with a sneer on his ugly face, making it even uglier. Then Leatherwood stepped aside to allow the much smaller man to regard Conrad and Kingman with a solemn expression. The man was in his late 50s or early 60s, with a slightly round face and wispy white hair. Unlike most of the Mormon elders, he was clean-shaven. He wore a sober black suit and a string tie. His mild demeanor and small stature made him seem harmless at first glance, but Conrad saw the madness burning in his pale blue eyes.
You men have caused me a great deal of trial and tribulation. I cannot tell you how much it saddens my heart to see that you still oppose the will of the Lord, Daniel.
It's not the Lord's will I oppose. It's yours.
I am the voice of heaven on earth. My will is the Lord's will.
Hyssop looked at Conrad.
As for you, young man, I expect nothing but heresy and blasphemy from an unbeliever, and you have not disappointed me. Unlike some of my faith, I bear no ill will toward Gentiles, but I cannot allow your sins to go unpunished. You made a bad mistake when you cast your lot with this defiant young sinner.
I was just trying to help a young woman.
Help her to do what? To fly in the face of everything that is divine and holy? The will of the Lord will not be thwarted. And neither will mine.
We'll take him out and kill him, Elder.
No! I will give this boy one more chance to repent of his sins.
Hyssop hunkered on his heels next to Kingman. He took hold of Kingman's chin and wrenched his head up.
You will attend my wedding to Selena Webster and witness her being joined to me by God. What happens after that will be up to you. You can renounce your sins by joining in the praise of this holy union, in which case you will save not only yourself, but also those poor young men you deluded into following you. Or you can remain defiant, and I will have no choice but to order that all of you be put to death.
You'll save the others?
They would escape the fate that would be theirs otherwise, yes. You have my word on it.
And what about Browning?
He is a Gentile. His sins go far beyond anything in my power to pardon. For the crime of killing our brethren, he must die. But I will see to it his death is quick and painless.
And all I have to do is give my blessing to your marriage to Selena?
That is correct.
Elder?
Yes.
Hyssop leaned closer to hear what the young man had to say. Kingman spat in his face.
Ugh. Burn in hell, you old toad!
A split second later, the toe of Leatherwood's boot smashed into Kingman's side, half lifting him off the ground. While he lay there whimpering, Hyssop straightened. Slowly and with great dignity, he drew a handkerchief from his pocket and wiped the spittle from his face.
You have sealed your fate. But before you die, you will watch the woman become my bride. Take them both and put them with the others.
At least some of the other men had been captured too, Conrad thought. That came as no surprise. Clearly, Hyssop had been expecting them to show up and probably had set up traps at the homes of the other women. Conrad had known from the start that was a possibility, but he had hoped they could rescue the women before Hyssop had a chance to put such a plan into action. The Avenging Angels reached down, grabbed Conrad and Kingman by the arms, and hauled them to their feet. They were marched toward Hyssop's house, then the group turned aside. They shoved the prisoners toward a large barn. Torchlight revealed the barn was built of roughly sawn planks. More torches burned inside. Ollie and the other two men were next to a parked buckboard, tied to the thick posts that supported the roof. They were bruised and bloodied, and their clothes were torn. Clearly they had been ambushed and beaten, too. The fourth man wasn't there. Conrad wondered if he had been killed during the struggle.
Oh, Dan. I was hoping you and Mr. Browning got away with Selena.
Leatherwood smashed a fist across Ollie's face.
Ah, you shut your heathen mouth! Don't sully the name of Elder Hyssop's new bride!
Riflemen surrounded them, so there was no chance to try anything as Conrad and Kingman were thrust up against posts and lashed into place. The men who tied the ropes made sure to jerk the knots cruelly tight. Conrad felt his hands go numb almost instantly. When the Avenging Angels were satisfied the prisoners weren't going anywhere, they stepped back. Hyssop had followed them into the barn, and he stood before the group of captives.
You other men should know you'll be dying because of Daniel Kingman's refusal to repent of his sins. It's too late to save any of you.
It's always been too late. From the first time any of us dared to stand up to you, you made up your mind to kill all of us. It's the only way you can hang on to your power.
My power has been bestowed upon me by the Lord God Almighty and cannot be taken away by you or anyone else. Just as Joseph Smith was visited by the angel Nephi, I too was visited by divine messengers who delivered unto me the knowledge and the strength to wrest this piece of heaven from a God-forsaken wilderness.
Hyssop flung out his arms to indicate their surroundings in the basin.
You cannot oppose the will of God and his prophet without paying the ultimate price.
He turned to Leatherwood.
Guard them closely. I don't want anything happening before the wedding this afternoon.
I understand, Elder.
Hyssop stalked out of the barn. Leatherwood picked out four of his men and told them to stand guard over the prisoners. Then he and the rest of the Avenging Angels left. Clearly, there were preparations to be made before Father Agony could take Selena as his latest bride.
What happened to Thomas? Is he dead?
I sort of wish he was, and I hate to say that. The rest of us put up a fight when Leatherwood's men jumped us, but Thomas surrendered and talked Elder Hyssop into forgiving him.
How did he do that?
He promised to go with Leatherwood back to our valley on the other side of the Salt Flats. Leatherwood's gonna go over there and burn down all our cabins and kill anybody he finds there.
Betrayed. It's all gone now. Nothing left.
But there was still one sliver of hope remaining, Conrad thought as he stood against the post where he was tied. That hope's name was Arturo Vincenzo. Conrad knew it was a crazy thought, but Arturo wasn't with the prisoners, and no one had said anything about him, so it was possible he was still somewhere in the vicinity of Juniper Canyon, still free. If everything had gone as planned, Arturo would have waited where he was with the horses until Conrad and the others came back. But things hadn't gone as planned, and Arturo might have realized that. In which case, if he saw some of the Avenging Angels coming to look for the prisoners' horses, he might have abandoned the animals and fled up the side of the canyon to go into hiding. That notion wasn't so far-fetched. The far-fetched part was hoping Arturo could do something on his own to save them. Despite the times when he had risen to the occasion, Arturo wasn't a fighting man. He never would be. It simply wasn't in his nature. Against a couple of hundred enemies, he would stand no chance at all. He would be doing well merely to survive for a little while. But where he couldn't outfight the Avenging Angels, maybe he could outthink them. If Arturo could figure out where Conrad and the others were being held, and somehow free them, they might still be able to fight their way out of Juniper Canyon and make a run for the Valley of the Outcast Saints, where they would make their final stand against Father Agony and his followers. If wishes were horses, Conrad thought bitterly, the odds against Arturo being able to pull off something like that were so small as to be practically non-existent. A dawn wind sprang up outside, gusting through the open doors of the barn and whipping up a swirl of dust that stung Conrad's eyes and nose. It bothered the other prisoners as well, but tied up as they were, there was nothing they could do about it. The guards pulled up their bandanas over their mouths and noses, protecting them from the dust, then moved farther into the shelter of the barn, but remained close and alert. Conrad watched the yellow light grow outside and knew the sun was coming up, shining through the pall of dust hanging in the air. He looked over at Kingman.
Do you get storms like this very often?
Wind storms, you mean?
Conrad nodded.
This isn't a storm. This is just a little blow. Sometimes the wind howls for days on end, and the dust is so thick in the air you can barely see your hand in front of your face. This is nothing.
Maybe so, Conrad thought, but it might be enough to come in handy by serving as a distraction for the Avenging Angels, just in case Arturo was skulking around somewhere. It was a faint hope, but Conrad was going to cling to whatever he could.
Ollie, have you seen any sign of Arturo?
Not since we left him earlier.
You reckon they caught him?
If they had, chances are they would have put him with us. I think he might still be loose out there somewhere.
Even if he is, what good can he do for us? Just one man. Not much of one of that.
That's what you think.
Don't try to give these men hope when there isn't any. It's bad enough we've gotten y'all killed. Don't make it worse.
We're not dead yet.
Time dragged. The heat in the barn rose as the day went on. Beads of sweat popped out on Conrad's forehead and trickled into his eyes and over his cheeks. He blinked them away and forced himself to look around the barn, trying to figure out if there was anything that could be useful in case of a fight. He saw a couple of pitchforks and knew their sharp tines made wicked weapons. Through an open door, he spotted a pair of shovels and a hoe, along with some other tools like hammers and a keg of nails. A number of boards leaning against the wall in the storeroom were probably used to patch the barn where horses kicked holes in the walls. Saddles and tack were stored behind another open door, and several ropes hung on nails near the door of the tack room. The barn had more than a dozen stalls, but only four of them held big, stolid-looking horses that probably formed the team for the buckboard. A bit of puzzlement was the large, folded piece of canvas that had been painted in bright blue and white stripes.
What's that, Ollie? Looks like a piece of a circus tent.
That's part of the old canopy that used to hang over the brush harbor for shade. Elder Hyssop replaced it a while back. He had it stored in here, and folks cut pieces off it now and then when they need some canvas. It's a sin to be wasteful, the Elder says.
Like that's the only sin Father Agony has to worry about.
He spoke too loudly. One of the guards heard him and came over wearing a scowl.
Don't you disrespect the Elder that way. The things you young heathens have done already are bad enough.
What are you gonna do? Hyssop wants me alive until after that fake wedding of his.
There's nothing fake about the Elder taking a new bride according to the teachings of the Lord. And as for what I can do...
The man slammed the butt of his rifle against Kingman's ribs.
How's that?
Kingman turned pale. Conrad thought he heard a bone crack. The way Leatherwood had kicked Kingman earlier, it wouldn't surprise him if Kingman already had some cracked ribs. Kingman sagged against the ropes, holding him to the post. The Avenging Angel grinned arrogantly and strode back to his companions. The wind had died down and the dust began to settle. Bright afternoon sunshine spilled through the open doors. Conrad was intensely thirsty, and his empty belly told him it had been a long time since he'd eaten. The day was slipping away. How much time did they have left? When was the wedding going to take place? Jackson Leatherwood stalked into the barn. He nodded to his men.
Have they given any trouble?
How can they? They can't go anywhere or do anything.
Just the way I like them.
Leatherwood sauntered over to the prisoners.
Your time is just about up. The wedding procession will begin soon, and when it's over, so will your sinful lives be.
What's Hyssop gonna do? Have us killed right in front of Selena? I'm sure that'll make her come to love him.
Now you let the Elder worry about what his plans are. I'm sure whatever he does, it's because God tells him to. And whatever I do, it's because the Elder tells me to. You see how it all works, Kingman? Nice and simple. Just the way it's supposed to be.
That would be fine if Hyssop really talked to God. But he's insane. He's not interested in doing what's right. He's only interested in his own power.
And just how do you know that, huh? Maybe you think you're a prophet. Maybe you think the angels come and speak to you.
No. The angels don't talk to me. I'm just a man. A man who's made some terrible mistakes in his life.
Kingman glanced at Conrad.
A man who wishes he could get a second chance so maybe he could undo some things. But there aren't many second chances in life, are there?
A disbeliever like you doesn't even deserve a first chance.
Leatherwood turned away.
Enjoy the time you got left, Kingman. There won't be much more of it.
The wind had begun to blow again. Conrad noticed it whipping around the long trails of Leatherwood's duster as the avenging angel left the barn. The light wasn't as strong outside as it had been earlier, and the air began to taste of grit.
Where will they have that wedding?
In the arbor, or in Elder Hyssop's house.
The arbor would be better, Conrad mused. Easier to get to. He hadn't given up all hope of getting free somehow, although the chances were getting slimmer and slimmer. If the weather didn't cooperate, the wedding would be moved indoors, which would make things a lot more difficult. He was thinking about that when instinct made him glance up. He couldn't see into the loft from where he was, but he could hear. And suddenly he heard a faint noise from up there. The scrape of a boot, maybe. It wouldn't be unusual for someone to be up in the hayloft, but the ladder leading to it was only a few feet away from Conrad, and he knew no one had gone up there all day. Then what was it he'd heard? A rat? Sounded mighty heavy to be a rat, he thought. Conrad tipped his head back and looked up again. He saw an eye peering back at him through a knothole in one of the loft's floorboards. Conrad's heart slugged hard in his chest as he recognized that eye. It belonged to Arturo. He had no idea how Arturo had gotten up there in the loft, but the hope he'd clung to all day finally had a chance to pay off. A chance was all he asked for. Arturo looked through the knothole for a few seconds, then Conrad heard something move again over his head, something heavy. If he hadn't been listening for it, he wouldn't have heard it over the sound of the rising wind. He looked at the guards. They seemed oblivious to the fact that someone was in the loft. Arturo looked through the knothole again. He seemed to be trying to tell Conrad something. He wished there was some way they could talk, but that was out of the question. He thought furiously. He had heard Arturo moving something heavy around up there. Well, he asked himself, what would you find in a hayloft that was heavy? Bales of hay, of course. Conrad could see it in his mind's eye. Arturo had shoved several bales of hay over to the edge of the loft. They would make effective weapons if he could drop them on any heads of the guards. The problem was getting the guards to stand where the hay would hit them when it fell.
Can't take this anymore. Hey! Hey, you avenging angels!
Browning, what are you doing?
I'm not going to die because of you. This whole mess is none of my business. I never should have gotten mixed up in it in the first place. Hey, guards!
One of the men strolled over to grin at him.
Quit raising such a ruckus. There's going to be a wedding taking place soon. You don't want to interrupt it.
The hell I don't! Tell Elder Hyssop I'm sorry, that I'll do whatever he wants me to do. I'll even become a Mormon if that's what it takes, but I don't want to die!
Well, you should have thought of that before you killed some of our brethren. It's too late for you to ask for forgiveness, mister. Blood calls out for blood.
But it was all a mistake!
Only one of the men had come in range. That wasn't enough. Conrad began writhing against his bonds.
You've got to let me go, please!
The spectacle of him humiliating himself drew two more guards over to stand in front of him and grin at him. That just left one of them standing near the door. Better odds, maybe the best they could get. But Conrad figured he could try a little harder. Tears ran down his face as if his nerve had broken completely. Kingman stared at him in disgust. Ollie looked surprised and disappointed.
Mr. Browning, you really oughtn't to carry on so...
I can't help it! I don't want to die. So somebody help me, please.
The fourth man came over to join the others in gloating.
Someone from above.
A large, heavy bale of hay fell from the loft, plummeting down to smash solidly onto the head of one guard and strike a glancing blow to another. The second pair of guards didn't have time to do anything except glance up in surprise before another bale came crashing down on their heads. It knocked them off their feet. The bales broke on impact and scattered hay all around the sprawled bodies of the guards. Arturo jumped down from the loft holding a pitchfork. He landed on top of one man and plunged the tines into his chest. The hay bales had stunned two guards, but the last man was struggling up and clawing at the gun on his hip. He had dropped his rifle when the hay knocked him down. Conrad kicked out as far as he could reach. The toe of his boot hit the man's wrist and sent the gun in his hand flying. Arturo pulled the pitchfork free from the chest of the man he had just stabbed and whirled toward the fourth man. He drove the razor-sharp tool into the guard's belly, tearing it loose as the man collapsed, and before the two men who had been stunned could regain their wits, he dispatched them with a pitchfork, too. When Arturo turned to face Conrad, his eyes were wide and staring hysterically. For a second, he thought Arturo was going to stab him with the pitchfork, too, but then he dropped it, stepped back, and passed a hand over his eyes.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, what have I done?
You've saved our lives, that's what you've done. Now cut us loose, quick.
Kingman and the other men looked amazed.
Did you know he was up there?
Don't worry about that. Come on, Arturo. That guard's got a knife on his belt. Get it and cut us loose.
Of course.
With a visible effort, Arturo shook off the horror he felt and stooped to pluck the knife from its sheath. He cut Conrad's bonds first, then tried to press the knife into his hands. Conrad shook his head as he flexed his fingers.
My hands are still too numb to handle the knife. You just keep doing what you're doing.
Very well. I hope I don't cut anyone.
Don't worry too much about that. Just get these ropes off us.
Conrad kept working his hands, getting the feeling back into his fingers as fast as he could. He watched the barn door. No one came near it. Outside, the wind still blew. An idea began to form in his head. As soon as his hands worked again, he stripped the gun belt off one of the guards and buckled it on, then hurried over to that big folded piece of canvas.
Ollie, give me a hand with this. Let's put it in the back of the buckboard.
What for?
No time to explain. Just do it. We'll need that keg of nails, a hammer, a couple of boards, and some rope, too.
He could tell Ollie was baffled, but the big man did as Conrad asked. Meanwhile, Conrad picked up a fallen rifle and went over to the door where he looked out carefully. Kingman joined him.
See anybody moving around?
Not yet. Everybody must be going to that wedding. Where's the arbor from here?
About a half mile in that direction, behind Hyssop's house.
Will all the men be armed, even though it's a wedding?
Leatherwood and the Avenging Angels will be. They always are. The rest of the men probably won't be.
That's good. We won't have to fight our way through the entire bunch.
Ollie came up behind them.
Got that stuff loaded like you wanted, Mr. Browning. Now what?
Hitch the team to the buckboard. It's going to carry us out of here.
Wait a minute. You plan to interrupt the wedding, load everybody on the buckboard, and ride out of here just like that?
We'll try to slow them down.
Even if we do, they'll catch up to us and kill us before we've gone a mile. We can't outrun Leatherwood in some stupid buckboard.
Just be patient. You'll see what I've got in mind.
What I see is that we're all going to be dead soon.
And if we are, wouldn't you rather die fighting? Wouldn't you rather try to save Selena first?
Kingman looked at Conrad for a long moment, then jerked his head in a nod.
You're right about that. I've been wrong about you from the start, Browning. I reckon you've earned a little faith.
Thanks. As soon as that buckboard is hitched up and ready to roll, we're going to attend a wedding, whether we've been invited or not.
Conrad walked over and put a hand on Arturo's shoulder.
You all right?
Yes, I just never did anything like that. I killed men, but not in cold blood.
That wasn't cold blood. Every one of those Avenging Angels would have killed you without even blinking if they had the chance. You saved our lives and saved your own, too. That's nothing to be ashamed of.
I suppose not. It's just, since I met you, I've done things I've never dreamed capable of. Both good and bad.
I'm sorry for the bad. We'll be out of here soon. And then we can get on to San Francisco and finish the job that brought us out here.
Sometimes I feel like it'll never be over.
How did you get away from Leatherwood's men?
When I saw them coming, I abandoned the horses and sought concealment in the trees up on the slope. I'm sorry I let them take the horses.
It was a lot more important that you stayed loose so you could help us.
After that, I made my way over the ridge where I could see what was going on down there. I saw them put you and those other men in the barn. I was afraid they might go ahead and kill you, but when I didn't hear any shots, I figured they were keeping you alive for some reason. So I snuck down here, and I found a rope hanging from a pulley in a window at the back of the barn. I was able to climb it and get into the hayloft that way.
That was smart thinking all the way around.
Thank you, sir. I've learned to be creative, shall we say, when it comes to dealing with villains. Traveling with you has taught me that, among many other things.
Sometimes being creative is the only chance you've got.
Ollie came over to them.
The team's hitched up and the buckboard is ready to go. But where are we going in it?
Leatherwood's coming. With some of the Avenging Angels. They're probably coming to take us to the wedding, so Hyssop can force me to watch him marrying Selena.
We're going to the wedding, all right. Everybody pile onto the buckboard. Ollie, can you handle the reins?
Yeah, I reckon.
All right. When we get out of the barn, head straight for Leatherwood and his gunmen. Whip the team into a run and roll right over them if you can.
I gotcha.
The men had armed themselves with the dead guard's weapons. Arturo climbed onto the seat next to Ollie. Conrad, Kingman, and the other two men got in the back.
Let's go.
They had turned the buckboard so it faced the open front doors of the barn. Ollie slapped the reins against the backs of the horses and they started forward, moving at a walk, then going faster as they approached the door. As the buckboard went through the opening,
yeah!
Ollie slashed at the team, making them lunge into a gallop. Leatherwood and five other men were only a few yards from the barn. When the running horses emerged and barreled down on them, they tried to scatter and get out of the way, but three of the men didn't make it. They went down under the pounding, steel-shod hooves of the team. Leatherwood was one of the men who had thrown himself clear. He rolled and came up on a knee to fire at the buckboard's occupants. Conrad threw a shot back at him, but missed as Leatherwood ducked. On the other side of the buckboard, the remaining gunmen tried to get up and crumpled as bullets ripped through them. That left Leatherwood firing futilely after them as Ollie sent the buckboard racing toward the arbor where the wedding was supposed to take place. Hyssop and the rest of the people gathered for the ceremony with no trouble had broken out, so it wouldn't be possible to take them completely by surprise. Conrad had a hunch they wouldn't be expecting wedding crashers, though. The sky was gray and yellow with dust. A hard gust of wind suddenly pounded the wagon as Ollie wheeled it in a turn and sent it careening toward the brush arbor. People scattered, fleeing the windstorm. Conrad spotted Selena dressed in a long white gown, struggling with Hyssop.
Selena! Selena, we're coming for you!
Avenging Angels ran toward the buckboard. Flames spouted from the barrels of their guns. Conrad crouched behind the seat and lifted the rifle to his shoulder.
Keep your head down, Ollie!
He fired over Ollie and Arturo, jacked the Winchester's lever, and fired again. Kingman was beside him, also firing a rifle. Three of the Avenging Angels spun off their feet as they were hit, causing the rest to scatter momentarily. The buckboard careened right up the aisle in the brush arbor towards Selena and Hyssop. Ollie hauled back hard on the reins to keep from running them over just as Selena finally clenched one hand into a hard fist and drove it into Hyssop's face. A punch jolted the elder backward. Seizing the opportunity, Selena pulled up her skirt and leaped into the back of the buckboard. Conrad grabbed her while Kingman sent a couple of shots racketing toward Hyssop. The elder rolled behind some benches and the shots missed, chewing splinters from the seats. Remnants of the crowd were still scattered around. Three women broke loose from the older men holding them, either their fathers or Hyssop's cronies to whom they had been promised as brides. They ran to the buckboard and clambered onto the back of the vehicle as Ollie struggled to get it turned around in the cramped confines of the brush arbor.
Better get us out of here, Ollie!
Conrad snapped another rifle shot at an Avenging Angel and saw the man go over backward as the slug punched him in the chest.
I'm trying!
Ollie lashed at the horses with the reins. They overturned some of the benches that had been set up in the brush arbor as they stampeded back into the open. Selena clutched at Kingman.
Oh, you came for me. You came for me. I didn't think there was a chance.
There's always a chance, as long as we're alive. Now get down!
The women hunkered low as the men surrounded them and kept up a steady fire. Conrad caught a glimpse of Leatherwood and triggered a fast shot at him as the buckboard flashed past, but he was pretty sure he missed.
Head down the canyon to the salt flats, Ollie, fast!
The salt flats? Wait,
go! Just go!
As the buckboard passed the corral, Conrad sent several shots close over the heads of the gathered horses. They were already skittish because of the hard wind, and the shots spooked them even more. They milled around, pressing hard against the poles, and suddenly the corral fence collapsed on one side. The herd broke free, panicking and stampeding. Conrad flashed a grin. That would give him a little more time to put his plan into effect. Ollie headed across the basin to the mouth of the canyon. A few minutes later, it came into sight through the swirling, blowing dust. Conrad looked behind them, but couldn't see any pursuit. The air was so full of dust, it was difficult to see for more than 100 yards or so. The buckboard barreled into a narrow part of the canyon. Conrad kept looking back, expecting to see riders appear on their trail. So far, there was no sign of pursuit. After a few minutes of the wild ride, the buckboard reached the end of the canyon and emerged into the gentle slope that led down to the salt flats about a mile away.
Keep going, Ollie, all the way to the flats.
But we can't go across there. The horses can't make it.
We're taking the buckboard, but not the horses.
Ollie looked at Conrad like he was crazy. Maybe he was, he thought. They would soon find out. Ollie brought the buckboard to a skidding halt at the edge of the salt flats, which stretched out ahead seemingly to infinity. The mountains on the far side of the flats where the valley of the outcast saints was located were completely invisible because of the dust storm.
Ollie, Arturo, unhitch the horses and let them go!
Conrad hopped down from the vehicle.
Let them go? You've lost your mind! You can't mean to walk across the flats. It's certain death, especially in a storm like this.
We're not walking. Ollie, once the team is unhitched, lift the tongue and prop it against the front of the buckboard. I'll tie it in place. The rest of you watch for Leatherwood. If you see anybody coming, let out a yell.
Ollie and Arturo unhitched a couple of horses.
By golly, I think I know what you've got in mind, Mr. Browning. We're gonna fix us a wind wagon.
That's right. We'll nail those boards across the tongue to give us something to fasten that canvas to. It'll be our sail.
A wind wagon! I've heard about such things, but I didn't know they were real.
They're real, all right.
Conrad really hoped they worked. He had seen pictures of them in books, but that was all. He climbed onto the buckboard and tied a rope to the top of the tongue after Ollie lifted it into place. Then he ran the rope to the back of the buckboard and fastened it there as well. They would have no rudder, so they'd have to go wherever the wind took them, but it would be away from Juniper Canyon, and that was all that mattered. The wind caught the canvas when Conrad and Ollie tried to lift it into place, and they almost lost their grip on it.
Rusty, you grabbed the buckboard! We don't want it taken off on us as soon as the wind fills the sail!
He had sailed in Boston Harbor as a young man, but that was a long time ago. A lifetime ago in many ways. He realized they should have left the tongue down on the ground and nailed the sail to it there, then raised it, but it was too late for that. He and Ollie kept struggling, and finally they had the sail tied securely in place. The men, along with Selena and the other women, held it back.
All right, everybody on! Be quick about it. This thing wants to get up and go!
Women first!
Kingman boosted Selena into the back of the vehicle as the other women clambered on. Their weight helped, but at the same time, the men had to hold the buckboard back by themselves.
Go! Get on there now!
He set his feet, holding on to one rear wheel while Ollie held the other. Kingman and the others climbed onto the buckboard. Conrad felt the strain on his muscles and knew he and Ollie couldn't hold it much longer.
You next, Mr. Browning! I got it!
Together! We go together! On three! One, two, three!
Conrad boosted himself up. The wind wagon leaped ahead as the sail billowed. Kingman grabbed Conrad's arm to steady him and finished the job of hauling him in. Conrad looked around and saw that Ollie had made it as well. Ollie looked a little wild-eyed.
Oh, Lordy! What are we gonna do now?
Go where the wind takes us!
The wind wagon was moving breathtakingly fast. The sail was full and straining at the makeshift mast formed by the buckboard's tongue. Everyone hunkered down and held on. When Conrad looked back, he couldn't see the edge of the flats anymore. It was like they sailed over an endless white ocean, only there were no waves. He felt like he had swallowed and breathed a bucketful of dirt.
Tear pieces off your shirts and rig bandanas for yourselves and the women. We need to keep some of that dust out.
Once they had done that, they seemed to breathe a little easier. Kingman crawled over beside Conrad.
You have any idea what direction we're going?
Not really. The wind was blowing away from Juniper Canyon when we left, but it's been shifting around all day.
So we may end up right back where we started.
No, the wind hasn't turned around that much. We're still moving away from the canyon, but I don't know what angle we're taking across the flats. I don't expect to come out right in front of the trail to the pass, though.
It'll take Leatherwood a couple days to get to the pass. Come around the long way.
That's what I'm counting on. That'll give us time to get ready for them.
Hyssop will send everybody he's got after us this time. He'll probably come along himself.
More than likely.
You know, you're a little loco, Browning. This was a good idea. I'm sorry we got off such bad start.
You mean that business about trying to have Arturo and me killed? Forget it.
No, I won't. And I won't forget what you've done for us, no matter how long Slade and I live. Or that might not be very long.
There was no way to tell how fast the wind wagon was going or how long its route across the flats would turn out to be. But Conrad thought they ought to be at least halfway to the other side. The vehicle continued rolling along, covering the ground seemingly as fast as a stagecoach could have. Suddenly, the buckboard lurched and slowed, then jumped ahead again.
What was that?
Conrad looked behind them, but didn't see any sort of obstacle that would have held them up.
We hit a soft spot! They're little tanks where water's collected under the crusty, dried salt. When it breaks, there's muck under it. Crust cracked back there, but the wheel didn't break all the way through.
There are a lot of those spots. How big do they get?
They're scattered here and there. I don't know how many there are, but there can be hundreds of yards across.
That was a new worry. Conrad didn't have long to brood about it. Suddenly, the buckboard's front wheels broke all the way through the crust and sank deeply into the salty mud underneath. The sudden stop made the rear of the vehicle fly up into the air. Everyone was thrown clear. And the buckboard went on over and landed upside down. Conrad's mouth was filled with the taste of salt and dirt. He lifted his head and looked around. The overturned wagon lay several yards away. Bodies were scattered around it. None of them were moving. But as Conrad tried to get to his feet, several of the victims of the wreck began to stir. Conrad spotted Arturo. With the muck dragging at his feet, he reached his friend's side as fast as he could and dropped to his knees. Arturo lay on his back, so he wasn't in danger of drowning in the mud. He moved around a little. Conrad got an arm around his shoulders and shifted him into a sitting position.
You all right? Anything busted?
Just every bone in my body from the feel of it. No, I'm fine. These are the others.
Ollie pushed himself upright.
What in the world happened? The buckboard's wheels broke through the crust into a sinkhole, and it turned over. Let's check on everybody.
Within a couple of minutes, it was clear no one had been badly hurt in the crash. A few bumps and bruises were the extent of the injuries. Conrad examined the wind wagon and saw that it would never work again. The tongue had snapped, and the canvas had come loose and blown away.
We're stuck out here.
We might be able to bust up some of the boards and tie them to our feet. Make salt shoes out of them instead of snowshoes. If we spread out the weight like that, we might not break through the crust.
That might work. But which direction would we go? If we start out trying to walk through this storm, we're liable to wind up wandering in circles.
We're gonna have to wait for it to blow over. That way we can see where we are.
And that gives Hyssop and Leatherwood more time to catch up to us. But you're right. Waiting is the only thing we can do. I just hope it doesn't take too long.
In the meantime, let's set the buckboard up on its side so it blocks the wind. We might be a little more comfortable behind it.
The men lifted and heaved and wrestled the buckboard into position. Then everyone huddled on the leeward side of it. Night was settling down earlier than usual due to the dust in the air. Shadows gathered quickly, and once the last of the feeble sunlight faded, utter darkness closed in. The dust in the air completely blocked any light from the moon and stars. Conrad couldn't see his hand in front of his face. Despite the terrible thirst and hunger that plagued them, exhaustion was too powerful to overcome. One by one, they dozed off. Conrad felt Arturo's head leaning against his shoulder and heard the soft snores coming from his friend. He tried to stay awake, thinking someone needed to remain on guard, but it was hopeless. His eyes were too heavy, and he succumbed to sleep. Conrad jerked awake. For a second, he thought someone was screaming, and that sent his hand groping for the gun on his hip. Then he realized what he heard were cries of laughter. The sun was beating brightly against his eyelids, and he forced his eyes open, squinting against the glare that came from the salt flats all around them. Kingman was the one laughing. He saw that Conrad was now awake.
Look!
He flung out a hand to point.
Look over there!
The edge of the salt flats to the west wasn't more than 300 yards away. Where it ended, the rocky slopes of the foothills leading up to the mountains began. In the distance, possibly 2 or 3 miles north of where they were, lay the pass. Conrad could see it from where he was.
We almost made it all the way!
The others started to come awake from Kingman's laughter.
The wind wagon brought us almost completely across the flats! We can walk that far!
Conrad pushed himself to his feet and squinted up at the sky, which was a beautiful, crystal-clear blue. The storm had blown over completely. It had left some salt heaped up at the edge of the flats, but otherwise there was no sign it had ever taken place.
Gather up the guns, everybody. Hyssop and Leatherwood are at least a day behind us, but they have horses and we don't. It'll take us a while to walk to the valley, and then we have to get ready to defend it.
A bleak expression replaced the grin on Kingman's face.
I'm going to blow up the pass. The more I think about it, the more I see that's the only answer.
But Dan, that won't stop Father Agony and Leatherwood in the long run. They'll just find some other way to get at us.
Not if they're in the pass when it blows up.
You mean lure Hyssop and all the Avenging Angels in there? Then drop an avalanche on top of them?
That's the only way to stop them for good. Otherwise, Selena's right. They'll find some other way to get into your valley, and they'll keep trying to kill you. Hyssop can't back down now, not in hope to have his followers stay with him.
That's murder!
No, it's self-defense. If they're trying to get to us to kill us, they deserve whatever happens to them. That's just common sense.
I believe that's correct. People can't be expected to sit back and do nothing while a bunch of fanatics who want to destroy them plot their demise. Taking action to prevent that is the only sensible course.
What's going to happen if Hyssop and Leatherwood are gone? Will the people who are left behind in Juniper Canyon still try to come after you?
I can't guarantee it, but I don't think so. Hyssop is the one who holds everything together, forcing people to do what he wants. Leatherwood is his enforcer. Neither of them has ever been all that well-liked. People are just afraid of them, that's all. Afraid of crossing a self-proclaimed prophet, sure, but even more afraid of Leatherwood's gun.
Then you'll have at least a chance to build lives for yourselves in the valley. Some others may even come and join you.
Kingman put his arm around Selena.
A chance is all anybody ever really gets.
Some of the guns had been fouled by the salty mud. The weapons could be cleaned properly once the fugitives got back to the valley. Once they were off the flats, they set a fast pace, but nobody was used to walking, and soon everyone's feet and legs ached. They pushed on anyway, and no one complained too much. After all, they had come through hell to get away from Father Agony and Juniper Canyon, and the passage to their deliverance was in sight, the pass that waited for them up ahead. It was the middle of the day before they reached it. Everyone was staggering from pain and weariness as they stumbled through the pass and paused at the top of the trail leading into the green oasis of the Valley of the Outcast Saints. Paradise Valley, Kingman had talked about renaming it, and Conrad thought the name suited it. The place looked as close to a piece of pure paradise as he had ever seen on Earth. He turned his head and looked over his shoulder, knowing that somewhere out there, riders were thundering inexorably after them, bringing death and destruction. You couldn't have a paradise without a hell to counterbalance it, Conrad thought. In that remote corner of Utah, those two things were about to come crashing together once again. The group hadn't descended very far into the valley when they saw riders galloping toward them. The men readied their guns.
Those are our friends! The men we left here!
The riders came up and hauled their mounts to a stop. One of the men dismounted and threw his arms around Kingman, slapping him on the back.
We didn't think we'd ever see you again, Dan.
I thought you boys were leaving. You decided you had enough.
Well, we buried the fellas Leatherwood killed and cleaned up the mess from the cabins that burned down. And the more we worked at it, the more ashamed we were of backing down like that. So we decided to stay after all. We were even talking about going back to Juniper Canyon to see if we could help you, but you're here now.
You'll still have a chance to pitch in. Hyssop and Leatherwood are somewhere behind us. They'll be here probably tomorrow morning sometime.
And we'll be ready for them.
What about Thomas and Todd? I don't see them with you.
Todd was killed in an ambush at Navajo Wash. And Thomas sold us out. He's helping Hyssop and Leatherwood now.
The men from the valley looked upset about both pieces of news, but they were pragmatic.
Come on back to the settlement. You look like you could use some hot food and some clean clothes. How How'd you make it through that dust storm, anyhow?
You might not believe us if we told you.
By mid-afternoon, everyone had cleaned up, eaten, and rested. The Avenging Angels had burned down Kingman's cabin along with a couple of others, but he and Selena moved into one left empty because its former occupant had been killed in the raid. She didn't like that very much, but he promised to build her a new home of her own as soon as they had dealt with the looming threat of Hyssop and Leatherwood. The entire population of the valley, plus Conrad and Arturo, met there for a council of war.
Hyssop and Leatherwood and the rest of the Avenging Angels are going to follow us here. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Browning and I think the best way to stop them for good is to lure them into the pass, then explode some charges that will cause the walls to collapse on them. If everyone agrees, we're going to ride up there and have a look to make sure it's possible. We won't proceed unless everybody thinks it's the right thing to do. I know I've sort of taken over as leader of this bunch, but I don't want to run roughshod over anybody the way Father Agony always has.
Dan, if you think that's what we ought to do, it's good enough for me.
Todd's dead because of those men. You can drop a whole mountain on Hyssop and Leatherwoods as far as I'm concerned.
I figured you'd feel that way, Dora. How about the rest of you?
He looked around the circle of grim faces. Everyone nodded. There was no hesitation.
All right, then. Browning, you want to come with me?
Sure. We've got enough daylight left to take a look.
The men who stayed behind in the valley had rounded up the rest of the horses, so there were plenty of mounts available. Conrad and Kingman saddled up a couple and rode toward the pass.
You know, you and Arturo would have time to slip out of here and get away before Hyssop and the others show up. We're the ones they really want to wipe out. They wouldn't come after you.
I'm not so sure about that. Leatherwood strikes me as the sort of hombre who holds a grudge.
Yeah, you could say that. He'd track a man halfway to hell if he wanted to kill him. Still, this isn't your fight. It never has been. But you've pitched in and risked your life a dozen times for us anyway. We never would have made it this long without your help. What's in it for you, Browning?
Nothing as far as I know. The only reason we stepped in to help Selena is because I don't like unfair odds. That and the fact that she's a woman.
A mighty good-looking woman.
Mighty good-looking woman, but that doesn't have anything to do with it. You wouldn't have any way of knowing this, Kingman, but I lost my wife not all that long ago. I'm not interested in coming between you and Selena.
Sorry. I didn't know. I don't know why you were headed to San Francisco, either.
Conrad hesitated, then began telling the story, sketching in the outlines without going into too many details. Kingman listened with interest.
Good Lord. What a terrible thing to have your children hidden away from you like that. And to not even know that you had children for so long. I'm sorry you've had to go through that, Browning.
Everybody has their own heaven and hell. I've had my share of both.
They reached the pass, and Conrad took out a pair of field glasses he'd brought from the settlement, using them to study the rock walls that loomed on either side of the opening. He saw some cracks and fissures where explosives could be planted and detonated to send giant slabs of rock thundering down into the pass.
Do you have dynamite or just blasting powder?
He pointed out the places to Kingman.
We have a crate of dynamite. That'll make it easier, won't it?
Yeah, we can direct the charges better with dynamite. There's a problem, though. Somebody's going to have to light the fuses, and it'll have to be timed perfectly so the explosion and avalanche will catch Hyssop, Leatherwood, and the other gunmen while they're in the pass.
You're saying that whoever does that might not have a chance to get clear before the blast.
It'll be a near thing.
I'll do it.
Not a good idea. Selena's counting on you staying alive, and so is everybody else. You said you didn't want to take over this community like Hyssop did with Juniper Canyon, but you are the leader of these folks, Kingman. There's no getting around that. They need you alive and well, and they're going to need you even more if the valley is closed off from the outside world.
I can't ask one of my friends to do something I'm not willing to do myself.
You won't be. I'll do it.
Not a chance. You've still got those youngsters to find. Somewhere out there, they're dependent on you whether they know it or not. I guess we can ask for a volunteer. Either that or draw lots. That might be more fair.
We'll go back and talk it over with everyone. That's the best thing to do. Right now, we've determined the most important thing.
What's that?
If we put the dynamite in the right place and set it off at the right time, we can drop a few thousand tons of rock right on top of Hyssop and Leatherwood, burying them for all time.
I can't think of any two varmints who deserve it more.
Conrad didn't think it was likely Hyssop and Leatherwood would approach the valley until the next day. But since he couldn't rule it out, he set up shifts of guards led by Ollie, who would stand watch at the other end of the pass. Kingman fetched the crate of dynamite and set the volatile stuff down carefully in front of Conrad, who lifted the lid to examine the waxed cylinders. The dynamite looked to be in decent shape. It wasn't sweating liquid hell the way some dynamite did when it got old and unstable.
What about fuse and blasting caps?
We have plenty of both. Like I told you, I thought about blasting out some of the springs to try to make them flow better. So I made several trips to the nearest settlement in Nevada to pick up supplies.
Paying for them with money you stole in those train robberies.
I don't deny that we've been outlaws and rustlers in the past. Maybe we ought to answer the law for the things we've done. But that's all behind us now. If we can live peacefully here in the valley, we will. It's good land, and it'll support us. But if you feel the need to turn us in when this is over...
I didn't say that. Maybe you'll get that second chance Hyssop was talking about. A real second chance this time.
Thanks, Browning. Now, do you think there's enough light to start rigging those charges?
I think we'd better, just in case Hyssop shows up sooner than we're expecting him.
They loaded the crate of dynamite in the buggy and hitched four horses to the vehicle.
I'll drive.
Are you sure? You'll have a box of dynamite right behind you.
That hardly seems more dangerous than some of the other things I've done since I've been in your employ, sir.
I suppose that's true enough. Just be careful.
I'll try not to drive like a... how do you put it? Like a bat out of hell, huh?
Kingman slung coils of fuse and a bag full of blasting caps on his saddle, and he and Conrad rode on either side of the buggy as Arturo pointed the vehicle up the main trail to the pass. When they got there, they found Ollie and another man standing guard.
Any sign of Hyssop and Leatherwood?
Nope. And we've been watching good, too, Dan.
Ollie held up a telescope.
I brought me a spyglass.
Keep up the good work. We're gonna plant that dynamite so it'll be ready for tomorrow.
Conrad dismounted and looked up at the rock walls looming over him. He had brought a pack with him. He loaded sticks of dynamite into it along with fuses and caps and slung it on his back. It was a nerve-wracking feeling carrying that much leashed destruction.
I can do that.
No, I've got it. I've handled explosives before.
Just not to any great extent, Conrad added to himself, and not while climbing up a cliff. He got ready to climb.
Now it is my turn to tell you to be careful, sir.
I appreciate that. If I get up there and fall, there's one thing you have to remember.
What is that, sir?
Try not to be where I land.
I assure you, sir. I'll be going in the other direction as fast as humanly possible.
After what seemed like hours, Conrad was finished with all four sides. It was painstaking, nerve-tightening work, and he hoped he would never have to do it again. He looked up to the sky and noticed that the light was fading fast. His muscles trembled with weariness, and he was soaked with sweat. But he had a length of fuse reaching almost to the ground on both sides of the pass. The stuff would burn fast. If the fuses were lit just as Hyssop and the others entered the pass, the blast ought to occur while they were still between the walls. Of course, that meant not only would whoever lit the fuses be in danger from the explosions themselves, he would also be smack dab in the gun sights of the bloodthirsty avenging angels as he did his job and then lit a shuck out of there.
I've got to admit, I was sweating for you, and I wasn't even up there. Looked like you did a fine job.
We'll see. We won't know for sure what's going to happen until the dynamite goes off.
Even if it doesn't completely block the pass, the falling rock ought to wipe out Hyssop's bunch.
Shall we go?
Yeah. Ollie, keep your eyes open.
Will do, Mr. Browning.